Welcome back to Freedom and Prosperity Radio, the weekly radio news magazine presented by the Virginia Institute for Public Policy. My name is Joe Thomas, and we appreciate you joining us this week, and I hope you've enjoyed the program to this point. And we finish up with a very special guest. The Wall Street Journal has titled our next guest the Roving Inspector General of the Modern State, and he's just penned a book. It is titled The Public Policy Hooligan, Rollicking and Wrangling from Helltown to Washington. He is Jim Bovard. Jim, welcome to Freedom and Prosperity Radio. It's our honor to have you, sir. How are you doing today?
Doing good. Thanks for having me on the show, Joe. I really appreciate that.
When did you first feel the urge to do what we would hope most of our journalists would be doing, which is, finding all the ugly little soft underbellies in public policy?
I don't know. It was something which kind of came natural to me because I've always been kind of cynical and sarcastic. And maybe at some point in my youth, at my I got a pretty good BS radar, and I was listening to politicians, and I came of age in the 1970s, and I was watching the country go to hell in a handbasket, and watching the Vietnam War come to an end in glorious end, watching the U.S. dollar plummet. Watching Nixon double cross the nation in so many different ways, and I was perplexed that the journalists were not tying together more of the different strands. It also struck me that most of the journalists did not really understand most of the federal policies they were commenting on, and so I was curious about that stuff. So I did more reading, and eventually I started writing, and eventually things started to sell. So,
is it? It must be very dispiriting for you because, you're describing a period of time that many young people would look back and it's sort of the heyday of investigative journalism and Woodward and Bernstein and bringing down the Nixon administration through whistleblowers and finding stories in Vietnam that weren't getting covered in the, CBS Evening News and all that. And you're saying even they were missing most of it. Nowadays, you must be, not even want to leave the basement.
I'll leave the basement. Okay, well, that's the same thing my therapist said. you're 100% right. There was some excellent work being done on some of the big issues back in the early, mid-1970s. But what struck me was that most of the press coverage of the, bread-and-butter federal agencies, like the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission or the Labor Department or the Agriculture Department, was very mentally passive. Basically, was just taking the press releases from the government agency and using that as the core of the story. Whereas if folks sat down and looked at what the government was actually doing and sifted through some of the nasty details, it was like, ooh, this is entertaining in a very dark comedy kind of way.
Well, and even go out to some of the farms and say, hold it, this doesn't jibe with what the press release said.
Well, right, and part of what struck me was that most of the journalists did not seem to have any interest or any instinct for Econ 101, because if you're looking at a lot of the government interventions, for instance, the subsidies for the Agriculture Department, you've had many decades of the government setting the price supports above the market clearing level, and then the politicians are mystified why the politicians are mystified why the farmers grow surpluses. the government sends a wrong signal, things screw up, and then government says, well, this proves that we need to do more of the same. And it was like that. It is like that in area after area. It was very frustrating to me to see how deferential most journalists were to most federal agencies.
And you mentioned agencies, because too quickly, I think people will hear us talking and say, well, are you talking about Republicans? Are you talking about Democrats? And you can find probably an equal number of examples in both political parties. You're talking about the industry of government. You're talking about, the agencies that really just sort of, tolerate the politicians because they need funding.
Yeah, very much. I mean, and it's very much of a bipartisan abuse. Both parties have been grossly negligent as far as reining in federal agencies, and both of them have generally not given a rat's patooey about violations of Americans' constitutional rights by these agencies. It's difficult to overestimate the ignorance of the average congressman.
That's beautifully said. I like that.
Well, it's just interesting having bumped into some of them or talked to some of them over the decades. It's just like, holy Shazam, here's someone who doesn't even read the headlines of the newspaper, much less the articles.
Yeah, and never mind say, hold on, what does this mean beyond that? Jim, when you start to poke around in this, and I've talked to friends who have been inside the Beltway long enough to take umbrage when I say that it is my least favorite city in all of God's green earth to go to, and I can never leave fast enough. Oh, this is a great city, Joe. Washington is full of really hardworking people. And I said, they may get up and put their nose to the grindstone at 4 a.m., but it's what are they doing with their nose to the grindstone? What, you know, to what end? And it just seems to be more and more, we'll tell you what to do and when to do it. You just stand by and wait for orders.
Well, yeah, you know, there's a whole lot of them I like to see put their nose deeper to the grindstone. It's interesting. There's a sanctimony about Washington, D.C., and a lot of the people that tend to live here. And, you know, there's this tacit notion that they're sort of doing God's work, even if God does. You know, it goes back. There was a wonderful line by Josh Billings, I think, a late 19th century a humor writer. And he said that a fanatic is someone who does what God would do if God knew the facts of the matter. And this is the mentality that a lot of the federal agencies have. They would do what the founding fathers would have wanted them to do if the founding fathers were smart as them.
Right. Well, you hear this argument all the time. Well, that Constitution was written 230 years ago. It doesn't apply now. I hear it frequently with someplace I want to talk with you about is the Internet. I hear people say, well, the Constitution doesn't take the Internet into consideration. I said, really? Does the First Amendment talk about free printing on a printing press, or does it just say the press, as in publishing? Because to me, I think the First Amendment is as equally applicable to the printing press in Ben Franklin's basement as it is to somebody's weblog.
Well, and it's a question of freedom of speech. I mean, if the government has a right to muzzle blogs, then that's going to be a precedent that it extends to newspapers, mm-hmm. to newsletters, and to people's birthday cards to grandmother.
Yeah. Well, what do you make of, and I know Lindsey Graham and Chuck Schumer have teamed up on this to come up.
That's always encouraging. You know, that's a partnership made in the lower circles of hell.
That's right. It's like, you know, Lindsey Graham and Chuck Schumer walk into a bar with a giraffe.
There you go. I mean, someone's going to be squealing.
Well, and they've started this under the guise of we want to protect journalists by licensing them, idea that it has not really gotten much coverage. I've had several folks from the Franklin Institute on to talk about it. Things like, but, you know, the premise seems so wonderful and warm and fuzzy that, oh, well, we don't want the NSA just busting down anyone's doors. So we're going to get a list of specifically licensed journalists, and they're going to have their First Amendment rights protected so that they will never have to worry about that happening again. And I said, well, hold on a second here. Isn't that what the First Amendment is for everybody, whether you're a licensed journalist or not? But the scariest thing is licensing journalism, because it seems like that would give them the rights to shut down websites that weren't being put together by licensed journalists.
Well, you know, I'm not sure, because the whole idea of licensing journalists, that's worked out pretty well in quite a few third world countries.
Yeah, well,
worked out great in Zimbabwe.
But I mean, it doesn't mean they won't try it.
Well, yeah, and it's sad to see that there would be any countenance given to that kind of notion. And it's interesting as far as I've spent some time in Germany and looked at some of their employment systems and practices like that. And there are only two professions in Germany that a person doesn't need a license for: journalism and prostitution.
Well, you learn from that, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I never took any journalism classes in college because I was kind of like, you know, I wasn't really interested in most of what I saw journalists doing. I wasn't interested in doing.
Which was just...
There were lots of stories about the fire department rescuing cats stuck up in trees and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it didn't seem like the local newspapers I was reading had much interest in raising hell.
Well, and you would see things wrong on the street and say, well, why isn't somebody saying this guy's homeless? There's got to be a reason, you know, figure out why.
Yeah, I mean, most of the newspapers did not seem to have a itch for controversy or for clashing with the authorities. And plus I was more interested in the ideas than in the local details.
Right.
So
And that started you down your path. What made you feel like right now was the time to put out Public Policy Hooligan?
That's a good question. I wish, you know, I should have a clever answer. I don't. It was something which I've whittled on off and on as far as some of these memoir sketches going back at least 10, 15 years. And I thought it might be interesting to try to weave together some of these stories. I'd had a few excerpts published a few places, and I got a nice response from readers on those. And I was curious to see if these would resonate with folks. And partly, it's a story of growing up in Virginia in the 1960s and 70s, and a lot of clashes with authorities there. Mm-hmm. And I was raised in a town that they actually shut down all the schools as part of massive resistance in 1958.
Front
Royal.
Oh, okay, because we're right here in Charlottesville, not all that far from there. So, and
well, you know, there's a long ways from Charlottesville to Front Royal.
Well, but we also
shut down 100 miles or 150 or something like that. What's the...
I've driven it a couple of times, and maybe it just doesn't seem like all that much. I've driven short distances in Connecticut that seemed like they went on forever.
It's all those darn